Well, folks, on Friday, there's going to be a memorial service to the memorial to the 270 victims of the December 21st, 1988 bombing of Pan Am Flight 103 over Lockerbie, Scotland. The memorial will be dedicated at the Arlington National Cemetery. And it's a very interesting memorial. It's been donated, as far as I can understand, it's a gift from the Scottish government. It is a 12-foot conical tower built from 270 sandstone blocks from a quarry that produced material for the base of the Statue of Liberty. It's a Scottish cairn, I think, is how you pronounce it. There are some families, though, that will not be represented there, some families of those who died in the Lockerbie bombing. And one of the people who won't be there is Marina de la Racoechea, and she is the sister of a woman who died on that day in 1988, and she's joining us here in the studios of WBAI. In addition to her, her lawyer, Bill Schaap, who is an old friend of WBAI and is a partner in a new law firm called Van Lierop, Burns, and Schaap. And we welcome you both to WBAI.
Okay, thank you.
Marina, why won't you be attending this ceremony?
Well, I won't be attending it because I feel that what started as a personal, loving effort from the relatives concerning their loved ones has turned into a message that I cannot accept. And probably the two main things that I find unacceptable is the fact that in a case that has been caused by a military action, that is the downing of the USS Vincennes in July of 88, would be placed at Arlington Cemetery, of all places. And the second is that the U.S. administration has been listening to our complaints, questions, and attended dark areas of the criminal investigation, and they have ignored it. But they have eagerly worked in helping to get this through and just make it a monument that I feel is a message for the world on the fact that this case is more or less finished. And we have not got justice or the truth, because what they have given us as the result of the criminal investigation, I consider meager, doubtful results that I cannot accept, given the sequence of events that led to the disaster and the way the criminal investigation was handled after, which, may I say, was never independent in the first place.
Mm-hmm. You say that there are some dark events. What are some of those events?
Well, probably the darkest event that I am still waiting for the governments of Germany, England, and the U.S. in particular to respond as to why this profuse, precise intelligence on a terrorist attack, retaliation because of the USS Vincennes that was expected, was a hoax for the general public, and yet it was valid, amply disseminated, and never revoked for certain parties.
Wait, explain what happened with the USS Vincennes.
The USS Vincennes was patrolling in the Iranian waters, even when the U.S. administration said that it was international waters, and it was an Iran air base with 290 civilians. And they shut it down. They saw it coming. They had some of the best equipment in the world to identify what kind of airplane was coming at them. And they thought it was a warplane.
So they blew up the civilian plane. And when was that?
That was on July 3rd, 1988.
So that was just... That was just 4 or 5 months before the blowing up of the Pan Am Boeing 747 over Lockerbie.
Yeah.
Now, what about the events leading up to the bombing? What did the United States know? What do you believe they understood in terms of terrorist warnings?
Well, immediately after, the Iranian government announced that there would be blood all over, and mainly from the Americans. But they wouldn't rest until this was avenged, which, you know, it is pretty much part of the Muslim culture. Anyhow, it was out in the public with intelligence intercepts that there was a contract out for $10 million by Iran for somebody to get even on this disaster. This the intelligence knew perfectly. They have forgotten, but for the next 2 years after the Panam 103, this was amply written by the entire media. This is the one astonishing thing. The media that has written so much about all these things for the first 2 years of the criminal investigation, all of a sudden, do not remember anymore. They only remember the two Libyans. And it's not so much a problem the two Libyans, which is a problem because of the way it developed. What is really incredible is that 2 years of one of the most expensive, extensive world criminal investigations with all sources and possibilities in their hands, you know, they have been feeding all this information to everybody. And all of a sudden, these 2 years of work disappear.
Why? Why do you think?
Oh, I think because it was a political moment where it was convenient to have Syria and Iran on their side because of the Gulf War. So on or about October of 1990, we started hearing for the first time of Libyans, seriously. First, there was, at the beginning, there were all possibilities. But by the end of 89, the Scottish police wrote a report stating that Marwan Crissett was the most likely bomb maker of the Panam 103. And when the Scottish criminal investigators decide to say the most likely, it means that it's probably a 200% possibility because of the way they work.
This was right around the time leading up to the Persian Gulf War. Libya obviously was not cooperating with the United States. Are you suggesting that the Libyans were not involved?
No, I cannot suggest that at all. What I find impossible to accept is that the first 2 years of suspects would disappear completely. I mean, I have serious doubts. In fact, in my first impression, I hesitate that given what they call hard evidence for these two Libyans, which it would never stand in any trial, because for one thing, the key piece to blame the Libyans was placed on a tiny piece that it was found 2 years later in the woods, enormous woods, very thick. And they find a tiny piece that they claim it was only sold to the Libyans. But the manufacturers said that they also sold it to Germany, which is where the PFLP-GC was originally, which are the original suspects from the beginning, from 3 months before.
And the PFLP-G are?
PFLP-GC is, I don't know if I'll be able to just say the entire name. It's a Palestinian Liberation...
General Command.
General Command, yeah.
Not
and it's
not part of the...
The leader is Ahmed Jibril.
Mm-hmm. We've also been joined in the studio by Marina's lawyer, Bill Schapp. Bill Schapp, are there also some other stories that were around about... why this plane was blown out of the air, too?
There are a number of theories. All of the early theories were consistent with the initial investigations, which pointed to groups affiliated in one way or another with Iran and Syria, and the most likely motive being, as Marina said, revenge for the downing of the Airbus. But there was also some concern about CIA activity in Europe at the time, which was widely reported in the beginning. Again, as the astonishing thing is a great many of the theories and a great deal of the information that came out very early on. And for those first 2 years, an entirely different scenario was posited than what happened later when the geopolitics of the Gulf War caused the U.S. to flip-flop and reverse the story. There were, as everyone knows, a number of CIA officers on board the plane who were killed. The story, which was current at the time, is that they were on their way back to Washington to criticize another group of CIA employees based in Frankfurt who had made the decision, apparently without notifying the Home Office, to allow some terrorist groups to deal drugs, to engage in drug trafficking in exchange for some tidbits of information. And this other group thought this was wrong. You don't let massive drug dealing and trafficking go on just because you might get some information from the people you're letting deal the drugs. And they had apparently announced they were going back to Washington to complain about what this other group was doing. And of course, they were all killed in the plane. Whether that was
Does that mean the drug trafficking continued?
Oh, yeah. Well, the drug trafficking has certainly continued. The CIA denies that it does this. It denies that it's actually turning a blind eye and letting this go on, but it's fairly common practice at least to let the enemy do some bad things if you think you can gain some information from it. But it's unclear whether the CIA people were the actual target of the bombing or it was in fact just an added benefit for the group that may have been involved in letting it happen. The big problem about this investigation is not so much exactly who did it and exactly how they did it, but the fact that government officials were keenly aware something was going to happen and let it happen for reasons that are very hard to explain, but may have had to do with wanting to gain the momentum vis-a-vis the Iranians so that they would then be able to retaliate. There was cable traffic reported at the very days after the bombing about diplomatic correspondence warning American embassies in Europe about a possible attack, and very specific, not we hear rumors that somebody might bomb some plane. We have reports that somebody is going to bomb a Pan Am plane going from Europe to New York sometime in the next few weeks. Mm-hmm. That's how these were dismissed by the subsequent investigations as sort of vague, unsubstantiated reports. They are not vague, and in fact, embassies such as the embassy in Moscow sent out a memo to all of the personnel at the embassy saying that there have been reports that a Pan Am plane might be a target of a bomb. And they were very specific that there would be a bombing attempt against a Pan-American aircraft flying from Frankfurt to the United States. And then they said, it's up to you whether you want to adjust any travel plans on account of this information. And of course, many, many U.S. diplomats and their families and friends changed their reservations, got off this flight, took different airlines or different flights. And at the time of the switch in theory, this cable traffic was dismissed as being vague and unsubstantiated and based on an unidentified caller. What was not told to the American people until a report came out only a couple of months ago, 2 or 3 days before that batch of cable traffic, there was another very specific cable, an internal State Department cable, warning not that an unidentified anonymous caller, but a source whose name is blocked out in the released document, of course, that a source had specifically said that the specific terrorist organization was targeting Pan Am Airlines and U.S. military bases, and it said the time frame is the present, and again, was treating this as a specific warning, not a general warning. In fact, that same cable had a separate section dealing with vague warnings, but this was the section dealing with specific warnings. And indeed, one of the problems is, of course, this was reported in the European newspapers, this new document. It only came out in July, and it was not reported on in the United States. It was not picked up because it runs contrary to the already concluded investigation, which says there were no specific warnings. There were only general vague threats, which presumably airlines get all the time. Nuts call up and say, hey, I'm going to blow up a plane. That's different from somebody saying, I'm going to blow up a Pan Am plane, and I'm going to take the Frankfurt to New York plane, and I'm going to do it in the next couple of weeks.
Marina.
Yes, I'd like to add to the fact that they claim that this is a hoax and that there wasn't anything credible or reliable about it, that by U.S. and English intelligence evaluation standards, this is precise intelligence. I mean, they have a series of degrees on the crank that might call and just say something. And then depending on how accurate and the possibilities, the moment, the situation, many factors, you know, a very limited number of them deserve attention. And these were one of them, not to mention the situation that it had developed with the entire intelligence, military also, military intelligence community, expecting a retaliation because of the USS Vincennes. So everybody was on the alert to the point that Mossad alerted at the end of October of 88 the U.S. Embassy in Bonn that there were major moves of members of the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine General Command, that is the PFLPGC, led by Ahmed Jibril, that they were moving towards Germany. And that's what led to the Operation Autumn Leaves, where they actually got a radio cassette bomb very similar, so similar that it was even the same manufacturer, Toshiba, that blew the Panam 103. I mean, what do they need? True information?
They've attacked countries on less information.
Marina, exactly. What was your sister's name?
Nieves.
Nieves.
Mm-hmm.
And how old was she?
She was 39 at the time.
Uh-huh. When did you realize she was on that flight?
I knew she was on that flight because we were extremely close. And not only we were sisters, but we were the best friends. And we would try to be together as much as we could, she being a flight attendant. And we could both move very easily. She would come to New York very often, and I would go to Madrid and Bilbao. So she had been here at the beginning of December, and I had gone to Madrid to spend a week with them prior to going to Bilbao for Christmas. And the day before, I took her things for Christmas and the presents, because that would make her easy for her to travel and just go home without any extra luggage or anything like that. But I had a very hectic day, so I had, and usually I had gone to bed very, very early, and they woke me up with the news.
Mm-hmm. Are you suing now?
We are suing the airline, which is, and this is another remarkable thing, the only thing we have been able to do so far is sue the airline. But only on civil charges. I mean, no high executives or people in charge of security have been taken to court for criminal charges. Nobody's being sued here. Everybody's getting away with murder, literally.
Your demands, as we wrap up now, when the families go to Arlington National Cemetery on Friday and you're not there along with some other...
Well, may I add something? My intention was not to have her name or her stone placed in the memorial, because I feel that neither truth nor justice has been done on the case. I do want the space reserved because I think she is part of it. And because I do know that relatives do this lovingly, but something has gone wrong in the development of this memorial. They have allowed other factors to intervene, and they sound very bad given the sequence of events. My intention is not to have her name or her stone placed. I'm not sure I can do that.
Well, we hope to keep in touch with you to see how this case develops, because certainly we can't get the story in the mainstream media or from our government right now. And
no.
I think it's only going to come from determined people like you who continue to put pressure.
I must say that there are a few very determined people working. I mean, we are all entitled to... It's our case. It's everybody's case. So everybody is entitled to... leave it and fill it as they wish. But even with the people that are going to the memorial, and I respect their positions tremendously, many of them are fighting very hard. And they are very unhappy.
Marina de la Racoechea, we want to thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
And we want to thank Bill Schaap, who is Marina's lawyer and is a partner in the law firm Van Lierop, Burns and Schaap.
Thank you, Amy.
And
thank
we hope you.
You
keep us updated as things develop.